Kentucky crime bill that includes a ban on street camping has been in effect since July. So how are police agencies enforcing the law? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about the ban, its enforcement, and its impact on people experiencing homelessness are Kentucky State Senator John Schickel. Welcome back, Senator Schickel.
It's good to be here.
Great to have you. Welcome House CEO Danielle Amrine. Thanks for being here, Danielle.
Thanks for having me.
And Boone County Fraternal Order of Police President Drew Christian. Welcome, Drew.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. I want to start with you, Senator Schickel. Walk us through the reasoning behind the camping ban that was part of House Bill 5, the street camping ban. Was the idea to get people off the streets and into shelters or rehab facilities? What was the thinking behind that?
Well, the thinking was that we have a crisis in our communities, in our cities, and in our communities of people that are camping in common areas which really weren't designed for camping. Some of our most beautiful parks and monument areas and streets like that are filled sometimes with campers. And what it's doing is it's causing neighborhoods to spiral down. People that want to use parks to play with their children or walk their dog or things of that are fearful to use those parks in the way they were intended. So we passed this law in hopes that it would help enforcing rules really that have been, you know, private property and public property. We've had rules about that for decades, really since the beginning of the state. But this was to clarify for police and county attorneys what they could do to hopefully, if they wished, to make some of these areas so we could use them again for their intended purposes.
And you were talking about camping in parks and that sort of thing. Are those, have you been hearing from constituents about that? Or had you been hearing complaints about outdoor camping, street camping?
We do. Businesses, it's hard on business, especially small business. A friend of mine has a business right up in Florence, a liquor store, and he has an encampment behind his store, and it's on his property. It's a liability for him. It runs off customers, and they get very confrontational and disorderly, and it hurts his business. That's just one example, but it's all over the community. In our more urban areas, what we see is our parks, our public parks, some of our most beautiful parks have been turned into squalor with homeless campers, and for me, that's just unacceptable.
Drew, what does the law require law enforcement officers to do? Are you required to make arrests? What kind of guidelines are part of the law?
So, yeah, this is still such a new topic for us. I mean, this law just passed in July, so it's been around about 6 months now. You know, they did a good job. It's all about the definitions that they put in the bill. They did a good job telling us exactly what we're to look for. You know, they defined camp, a camp facility, and camp paraphernalia. And our job is to try to identify those things, and they give us the option that we can provide a citation, which is a violation. It's like a traffic citation for the first offense. The second offense, it goes to a B misdemeanor, which is a little more severe if they either refuse to seize their camp at that time or you catch them there again at a later date. Mm-hmm. So the guidelines that they've provided us in the unlawful camping bill, which is it's a KRS now, they did a great job with it, but like I said, it's still so new that I think the police agencies and local law enforcement are trying to figure out the best way to do it, because it's not truly about just citing or arresting them to get them out. We want them to get the help. We want them to go to the right location, and we're lucky regionally that we have, you know, police social workers that are popping up at agencies, and their goal is, too, to try to get them the right help off the street, not necessarily end up with a citation, but this is the support that law enforcement needed to have their back if that doesn't work out for them.
Mm-hmm. And Danielle, Welcome House is one of the agencies that provides that help to people who are experiencing homelessness. You all work in 40 counties across Kentucky now. What are you seeing in terms of enforcement? Is there a lot of variation among different communities?
Yeah, there is a lot of variation. So we have really good relationships with Boone, Kent and Campbell, Maysville, where we're working proactively with police to do encampment resolutions or to work with people to get them connected to resources. It varies by city, by county, on if they're choosing to take a more aggressive approach and issue the citations. And sometimes The population we serve can't afford to pay those citations, so they will choose to be incarcerated instead. So we are seeing some communities that are a little bit more aggressive in issuing the citations and the fines than we have here locally.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about Kentucky's street camping ban, how it's being enforced, and what it means for people experiencing homelessness. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Danielle, you talked about sometimes you work with law enforcement to resolve camp encampments, places where people are kind of living in these outdoor camps. What are some of the challenges that people who are sleeping outside face when encampments are resolved or cleared? I mean, depending on how it's done, people can lose a lot of possessions, paperwork. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, I think it's very destabilizing for a population that has experienced a lot of trauma. They have birth certificates, IDs. Sometimes those things get lost in transitions, and it's very difficult when these things aren't resolved. They're just moved to another location. So that, you know, that constant transition, that transient nature, we're not really solving the problem. We're just moving it potentially to another location.
Yeah. And talk a little bit more about how Welcome House works with people in encampments and collaborates with law enforcement. I mean, you said to Drew before we started, we're on the same team here. We mm-hmm. want to get this resolved.
Absolutely. So we all want the same thing. We don't want people to be outside. So working together with law enforcement, so when they come across an encampment that needs resolution or they're coming across somebody that's experiencing homelessness, they can contact our street outreach teams. And our street outreach teams generally have really good relationships with these people. So it's one of the very interesting dynamics of homelessness. Urban homelessness and rural homelessness looks very different. So our street outreach teams are going out and building relationships with individuals, and that sometimes takes days, months, weeks, years to get a trusting relationship with that individual. So when the police do approach us and say, hey, we're going to clear this camp in this industrial zone, or we're off this business property or in this park, we're able to go out and we've got a relationship with those individuals so we can get them moved to a safer location. We can try to talk to them about their interest in receiving services or any other needs or barriers that they may have.
So it's a matter, excuse me, you have to have a relationship with the folks who are outside, but also have a relationship with law enforcement so they can give you a heads up that, hey, this mm-hmm. this needs to be resolved. Senator Schickel, what do you think about that approach, what Danielle's just described? Do you have thoughts about sort of how this stuff should be resolved?
Of course, I have thoughts about it. But, you know, one thing that I want to bring up that Danielle said, and I think it's very important, I think Drew said it too, is that, you know, county attorneys are elected. Sheriffs are elected. So each community can use this law the way they best see fit. Some communities are very aggressive and other communities are not. And that's fine. That's the way we intended it. We did not intend all communities to do the same. In my community, I want my county attorney to be aggressive. I want my sheriff to be aggressive. But that's not true in every county. You know, when you say we all see it the same way, I really don't think we do. I think it's an unrealistic or a false narrative on who the population is. When I'm saying that, I'm talking about the population that's in these camps that are around the bonfires, behind the liquor stores, under the underpasses. I've gone, believe it or not, and I've sat around those campfires and I've talked to those folks. And for the most part, these are people with mental illness, drug and alcohol and severe drug and alcohol problems, who many times do not want to go into a shelter, because if they go into a shelter, they can't use drugs and they can't live the way they want to. Only when it gets very cold will they go into a shelter. The reason for this is I think we've relaxed a lot of our laws as far as drug use and possession, so people don't fear using drugs in public anymore. And that's a whole nother discussion about criminal justice reform, which I think was a big mistake, the way we did criminal justice reform several years ago, and now we're reaping the negative benefits of that. So I don't really think we do all look at it the same. I know it sounds good to say that. Certainly we want people to have shelter and we want people to be warm, But I think the narrative that many of the nonprofits put forward is really a false narrative. Hmm.
Danielle, what do you think about that?
I think that we do experience people who are outside that choose to be outside. We do have people that we serve that are addicted to substances that also or have mental health issues or have comorbidities. I mean, that's just reality no matter where we're at. I think I don't think that that's a false narrative being put out there, at least from my perspective. I think that we know the challenges of the population that we serve, and that's why we're trying. And I think us all being under the same assumption that we don't want people to have to suffer and we don't want to have people outside. I think that puts us all on the same team. At least that's my hope, is that we're all working collaboratively towards the same goal is, you know, we don't want people outside. We don't want people harming businesses. We don't want people being at risk. But the data and the statistics also, you're 99% more likely to be housed if you have a mental health issue. You're 99% more likely to be housed if you have a substance use issue. So these issues—
You're more likely to be housed?
Most of the population that has a mental health issue or a substance use issue are housed. 99% of them are housed.
And why is that? Because there are programs specifically for that?
Well, and
oh, you mean just the general population?
Yeah, just the general
population. Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, the homeless issue, this is, for me, from my perspective, is a policy issue and a lack of affordable housing and shelter space issue. So it's not a characteristic. It's not a personality flaw. It's not something necessarily that's always chosen. There's a lot of background and history to get somebody to that point, in which we've determined risk factors and all that to, you know, estimate the percentage or somebody's likelihood of becoming homelessness. So for me, House Bill 5, you're just treating a symptom. It's a very expensive way to treat a symptom. We're not really treating the cause. The newest study from Kentucky Housing Corporation of the housing supply gap, we're over 200,000 units short.
In Kentucky alone,
and we're estimated to be closer to almost 300,000 short by 2029. So when we're talking about having an epidemic or a crisis, I think homelessness is solvable. I know it is, and I know that we can do it, but some of these other causes have to be addressed, not just the symptoms.
Drew?
So I somewhat agree. You know, I've been in law enforcement almost 14 years now. And you've seen the changes in, you know, the homelessness, especially in the region that we work. It goes up and down, but it's generally going up, at least in our area.
In Boone County, you're
talking about? I think a law like this was necessary because for so many years we've tried the treatment thing, we've tried the placement thing, and it just hasn't worked. And now you're running into issues where you have a homeless male that is sitting outside of a library. It's causing the public not to want to use the library that's there for them. We've tried to get people assistance. They go for a day and they go, well, I don't want to follow the rules, I'm leaving. And in turn, those are the same people with the substance abuse problems and, you know, a criminal history that are now, they need food. So what are they going to do? They're going to go down the street and rob the Arby's. They're going to wait for you to park your car and not lock your door so they can ransack it and take what you need. So I feel like this is a good step to show other people that more needs to happen than just the treatment side of it. I think we're in the right direction, but I agree there is an underlying problem, definitely with housing too, because we see that as well.
Danielle, did you want to add to that?
In the state of Kentucky, over the last 16 years, we've had a 58% decrease in the amount of homelessness statewide for the balance of state, which is the 118 counties outside of Louisville and Lexington. We've had an 81% decrease in family homelessness since the start of the annual point in time count. So there are organizations, there's measures that are in place that are evidence-based and prove the efficacy of what we can do when we focus these evidence-based interventions. So for me, looking at that and capitalizing and building momentum off those statistics and kind of what works, I do agree. I think we're seeing shifts in homeless. We're seeing that it was record number of first-time homeless, almost 1 million first-time homeless across the United States this year. You know, that is lending itself to employment, inflation, and a lot of the prices of rent. I know there was a study done that had Newport had one of the highest rents in the entire state. So all of those things are creating kind of this this almost tornado effect that's impacting even first-time homeless. But, you know, I just wanted to make sure that we know that there are approaches that worked. And when we're talking about, I think there's this split right now between housing first, which is an evidence-based practice, which we're working on somebody getting into housing, versus putting them through treatment first. Mm-hmm. And housing first has an evidence-based percentage of 88% decreases in homelessness using housing first versus a traditional treatment approach of 41%. So we know that, you know, even for Welcome House, we serve over 3,000 individuals a year, 75% of them exit into a positive housing. So for the context of this conversation, investing, you know, the law is what the law is. So how do we work within the confines? I think it supports our law enforcement, supports local businesses. I'm all for that fiscal responsibility. But also in that fiscal responsibility, these are very expensive approaches to solving homelessness. And a lot of studies show, like Denver did anti-homeless laws, and it cost them $750,000 annually, and they had a zero reduction in homelessness.
We've got a lot more to talk about with this. We're going to continue our conversation after a short break. And later in the program, we're going to hear about some possible solutions for Kentucky's housing shortage. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WBXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about Kentucky's street camping ban, how it's being enforced, and what it means for people experiencing homelessness. My guests are Kentucky State Senator John Schickel, Welcome House CEO Danielle Amrine, and Boone County Fraternal Order of Police President Drew Christian. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at wvxu.org. Senator Schickel, one of the things that came up a lot during the debate about this crime bill that is now law in Kentucky was the idea that it would criminalize homelessness. How do you see it?
Well, it does criminalize homelessness under certain circumstances, and I think that's a good thing. With private property, we should respect people's private property. And when you camp on someone's property or you camp on public property without permission, without compensating that person, that's theft. And that's a criminal act. We're calling it, you know, people want to make a big deal about it, but it's theft. And we respect people's property. We respect their businesses. And if you take their property without their permission, you should be prosecuted, especially after you've been warned and given an alternative to do something else.
Were encampments under bridges something that you all thought about when you were doing this? And I ask because, of course, we had the fire under the Daniel Carter Beard Bridge in Cincinnati. That was a fire that was caused by a playground. There wasn't an encampment under there. But I know there was some warning that came out from the federal government several months before that saying, hey, make sure there's not flammable material. Folks from the Ohio Department of Transportation said that they were trying to kind of keep an eye out for encampments, construction materials, that kinds of things. Were those the sort of things that you all were thinking of when you were passing this legislation?
That was one of the many things. Homeless people tend to congregate where it's warm and there's shelter. And sometimes these power plants and bridges and industrial sites of that nature are places like that. But they're also very dangerous. And not only are they dangerous to the people camping there, but they're dangerous to the public, because when something goes wrong, it affects the public. So a power station goes down because of a fire, it affects the public. If a bridge burns down because of a fire caused by homeless, it's a huge issue. So we were thinking about all these things. We were thinking about business. We were thinking about parks. We were thinking about industry. We were thinking all those things were a concern.
Drew, has Boone County, as far as you know, or the different some of the different police agencies that you deal with in your role as president of the Boone County Fraternal Order Police, have people been cited under this law yet? Do you have problems for them showing up to court if they need to be in court?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think there's been many cited as of right now. I do know of at least just one case in my head. They do have trouble showing up because a lot of times they don't have the access to the, you know, the transportation to get there or a clock to know what time it is. There's a lot of resources out there. I know that we've talked about them here, but there is a resource to provide them with that they are given provides them with their way to get to the courthouse and do that. But you don't see that. What you see is, you know, the crumbled up citation 2 days later that's in the wind going down the street. And that's a huge issue. And that's what you said and what Senator Schickel said. In this law, it specifically goes after or specifically mentions areas under a bridge or underpass and with a plethora of other places that this can be enforced. Mm-hmm. But that's just one of them. And now we're looking at, you know, nobody said that's what happened recently, right. But, you know, it could be.
Right. Yeah. And I want to just clarify, I'm not trying to imply
correct.
That people who are homeless had anything to do with that fire in the Daniel Carter Beard Bridge. I just know that's something that ODOT has said, hey, we were looking for flammable things. And that's one of the things that we
yes.
had looked at prior to the fire. Danielle, I wanted to ask you about this whole court case thing, because Louisville Public Media reported recently that dozens of people in Jefferson County who were cited under the law haven't shown up for court because of all these barriers that Drew was talking about. They have had bench warrants issued for them. I guess I'm wondering if you're seeing that in other parts of the state, that Welcome House, where Welcome House works, and what impact that kind of thing can have on people who are homeless.
Well, it definitely exacerbates the situation for sure. We have not seen a lot of that locally and in some of our other jurisdictions. Like I said, when somebody is ticketed, they are given the chance to go to jail. So instead of in lieu of paying the fine, they're choosing to do 10 days in jail. So, which is also very expensive for the taxpayer. So luckily for us, we're not seeing these kind of negative ramifications in some of our other counties that we serve, but that doesn't mean that it's not going to take that course as we, you know, this is new, it's all coming out. So that's why we're trying to get ahead of it and work with all the local jurisdictions that we provide services in to let them know that the resource is there, to have our street outreach team's number. So when they come across somebody experiencing homelessness, what we want to do is just be a support. We want to make the law enforcement's job easier. We want to make the businesses aware, hey, if you have somebody, give us a call. I wouldn't ask a plumber how to do heart surgery. So, you know, if we have relationships with these individuals, we like to go out there. Sometimes they get aggressive with us sometimes, too, and that's okay. You know, we have trained people. We have trained professionals that have lived experience in those communities that know where people are. They know what services they need. They know how to get them connected to services. And that's our goal, is the law. Like I said, the law is already passed. It is what it is. So how can we make this more collaborative for our entire communities? How can we make it less punitive on the people that already don't have anywhere to go and already have several other challenges? And that's what our goal and hope is.
Yeah. Senator Schickel, this came up earlier in our conversation, and I talk with advocates for people who are homeless, I hear all the time the problem is housing. You know, there's just not enough housing, and we're going to be talking in the second half of our show about this gap and how much more housing Northern Kentucky needs, how much more housing Kentucky needs. What, if any, role do you think the state lawmakers could be playing to create more of this housing?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that, because I was thinking about it just as you asked me. For this notion that there's a correlation between affordable housing and homelessness. Now, when I'm talking about homelessness, I'm talking about a category of homelessness. It is an issue for the 25-year-old or 30-year-old that's living in their parents' basement or living with their uncle, and depending on what category you talk about, those are homeless. But what this law is targeted to is homeless camps. I don't think there is a correlation between that and affordable housing. The advocates want to push that false narrative, but if you go talk to the folks, and like I say, I've sat around those campfires and drank beer with those folks and talked to them, it's not an issue of about affordable housing. That we do need, that is an issue, but my point is that's not going to make this category of homelessness that we're talking about now go away. The same is true with drug treatment. You hear, well, it's an issue of drug treatment. We have more drug treatment beds in Kentucky than any state in the nation. We have put a lot of money into drug treatment, and our drug problem is worse than ever. This at the end of the day, is a personal responsibility issue.
Well, I want to ask you just a little bit more about that because, you know, Danielle mentioned earlier, and I didn't get it when she first said it, but there are a lot of people who are homeowners who have serious mental illness and who drink more than they should, who, you know, do illegal drugs, but they own their homes. Maybe they rent. They don't get in trouble. They have a roof over their heads. So how do you see that? And I know you said you talk to people who don't want to go into shelter because they don't want to follow the rules. But if they had, they could be drinking beer in their apartment if they had an apartment to go to. So how do you not see a connection here?
Well, I do see a connection. I do see a connection. And it's true. You know, if you study alcoholism or you study drug use, you know that there's several categories of it. One is a functioning alcoholic, and some of those are very successful business people and do real well. And then we know there's other people that have that genetic imbalance where it really affects them. And they're addicted. But so I do see a connection between drug dependence, alcohol abuse, and homelessness. Now, does that mean that all these folks are homeless? Well, absolutely not. But I also believe that affordable housing for this subsection of people is not the issue.
Did you want to add something, Drew?
Yeah, he hit the nail on the head. This is specific to the camping portion. It's not just, you know, all homeless persons or homeless, that are on the street. It is very specific. The definitions of the law are very specific. And if it doesn't fit that, then the enforcement action can't be taken. So it's important to know the law from the law enforcement side of it, to know what you're looking for and then know how to cite and then know how to charge. It's also important that the shelters and stuff know, you know, we're truly not out here just to arrest people and cite people for being homeless, but we've tried for many, many years to get them where they need to go, and something had to change, and this law is what's going to be helping that, hopefully.
Danielle?
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of circle back to Senator Schickel's comments. I think that's great that you're connecting with the population and understanding. I think there are people that obviously are always going to struggle. But I disagree by saying that this population doesn't want housing. And the reason I know that is because for 7 years, I've worked with this population day in and day out. We have housed thousands of people who are addicted to substances, have mental health issues, have been chronically homeless. So they've been homeless 2 years or longer and have been outside and haven't wanted that. And we've been able to build and establish relationships with them and have an effective model. So, for example, we had a guy that had been homeless since 1995. He had two toes left on his feet due to frostbite. And he said, I'm ready for housing. I want to get into housing. And we have a lot of people that are still very successful to this day. So while they may not want to follow the rules of shelter, if there's shelters that aren't allowing them to do X, Y, and Z, that may be true. But we also don't have enough shelter beds in our region. We're severely lacking probably hundreds or thousands of shelter beds in our community. But where we're lacking is the affordable housing, so those individuals don't even have a choice. They don't even have the option. And I know you guys have probably heard the adage about how every county in the state of Kentucky is required to have an animal shelter, but we're not requiring people to have, you know, our communities to have a number of shelter beds for the population that we have and tracking those statistics. And something I wanted to bring up was in Utah. So Utah had anti-camping bans and some criminalization of homelessness. They did end up repealing that and putting in a housing first methodology to their approaches to homelessness. And they had a 91% decrease in homeless by switching from criminalization to housing first. I mean, we're seeing these in several different states and several different communities. So for me, the evidence lies in housing first. Even our statistics in Kentucky of what we've been able to do to reduce homelessness, reduce family homelessness, that's incredible. 58% decrease in homelessness since 2008. Those are really overwhelming and powerful statistics.
I apologize. There's so much more we could be talking about. We might have to get the group back together again, but we have run out of time. I've been talking with Kentucky State Senator John Schickel, Welcome House CEO Danielle Amrine, and Boone County Fraternal Order of Police President Drew Christian. Thank you all so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's great to be here.
Up next, Northern Kentucky has a housing shortage. We'll hear about some proposed solutions to address it. This is Cincinnati Edition.